Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Hello, it's the Crystal Palace fan show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and James Howard, and DR Kurnaz of Back of the Nest. And lads, do you want the good news or the bad news?
Bad news,
yeah,
all over.
Bad news.
Bad news. Okay, well, this is going to... It's breaking. You're not going to have heard anything about this, so steel yourselves. Aaron Wan-Bissaka's gone to Man United. 50 million quid. Are you shocked?
Well, you know, that's it. That's the news of the week, isn't it?
Exactly. It's not like we've been talking about this average win-back for the last couple.
Well, you know what, lads? On this show, we did our absolute best. We kept this quiet. And frankly, the fact that Manchester United scouts managed it, despite our subterfuge, I'm quite impressed.
We obviously didn't do a very good job at it, that's for sure.
Maybe. It was 50 million, so that was...
Yeah, you've got decent money. In just a moment, we're going to talk about whether you're happy with the deal you got. But you've had the bad news. You need the good news, surely.
What's the good news?
The good news is that it's coming home. The Lionesses currently in action 3 minutes in against the USA. It's still 0-0, although the Americans are looking quite potent on the edge of that Lioness box. Steph Houghton having absolutely none of it as ever. She's just been made. Updates for you throughout the show. Good save, Barnsley. Tell you what, scrambles already in that Lioness's box. The pressure is still on. Headed clear. Ooh. Alex Morgan.
Rose.
Well, you're not going to win the golden boot like that. That's all I can say. Someone sitting behind the goal has just been knocked out. Palace fans knocked out by this AWB news. I saw it and I thought of you guys immediately. And I felt really bad for you because, firstly, you love him. He's come through as one of your own. And secondly, there seemed to be a genuine belief amongst the club that he was going to stay.
Yeah, I'm really disappointed, to be honest with you, because it's one of those players I so enjoyed watching. And as a defender, you know, you tend to watch out for strikers, forwards more than anything. But as a defender, I so enjoyed watching him play at such a young age. He was so consistent for us. I'm really going to miss him. And I really felt that, you know, he would, you know, at least retain his value or increase his value if he'd stayed, and it would be better for him personally going forward.
So do you think everyone made the wrong decision to sell him?
Not necessarily. I mean, I've thought really long and hard about this, and I can see the reason why he's been sold. You know, there's two examples here of... where Palace players have gone and it hasn't worked out. The first one was obviously Zaha's first time he went to Man United. That didn't work out for him personally, and he ended up coming back on loan and re-signing. You know, he wasn't the big fish in a small pond, and that's going to happen again with Aaron Wan-Bissaka. Then Bolasie, you know, he went to Everton for near enough £30 million and he ended up getting injured, and he hasn't really... shone in the Everton team, and he's now out in Belgium playing his football. So you have to say, actually, you know, maybe the manager and the owners are saying, well, you know, perhaps 50 million is good money for him. Just 1 year that he's been in the team, things may not go particularly well for him. I think they will, but they may not go particularly well for him. Because he's going to have to justify the price tag that he's got. He's going to be expected to perform week in, week out, especially for Manchester United. They're not just going to rely on him defensively. They're going to really expect something from him going forward. And I haven't seen enough of Aaron Wan-Bissaka going forward to really value him to be completely sure that he will do a consistently good job for Man United.
Is that, I think you're absolutely spot on, but is that attacking flair something that we often see come later for fullbacks? Marcelo, for example, at Real Madrid, didn't look that special for quite a while, despite being highly rated. And then at about the age of 25, suddenly went, oh, by the way, I can defend and I'm also Ronaldinho.
Exactly. That's the thing. He's only 21 years old, but it really depends on how well United treat him, because we've seen at United... it's not the greatest period right now with on and off the pitch, basically, with issues going on. So that's what I wouldn't say I'm worried about, because I'm not really worried about Wan-Bissaka from now on, as he's not our player. But
you don't have any loyalty to him because he doesn't have any to you?
It's not like that, but
it's enough if it is.
I don't see it like he's not Palace player anymore. And it's not like we really had a connection with Wan-Bissaka because it happened so quick. It was like a season. It's not like...
It's a summer romance.
Yeah, it's like...
You're back from holiday now.
If Zaha leaves, it'll be much different because he's been here from a young age and it's now 26 years old and we've seen great moments. But with Wan-Bissaka, don't get me wrong, he's a fantastic footballer, but there wasn't a connection off the pitch. And I'm not criticising his character because that's just who he was, and it was such a short but good spell. But overall, I just want to see what United do in terms of developing him, because that's where, if I had a concern, well, I'm not concerned, it would just be that going forward. But once he improves his game, which he did show towards the latter half of the season, that he, you know, he has potential to improve there with his crosses, and once that is sorted, then he'll be a brilliant player and probably be worth around 80 million.
A quick update for you from the Lionesses. Still 0-0 in France. After a shaky start, starting to get into this game, Lucy Bronze looking every bit the best player in the world, as Phil Neville claimed. And Nikita Paris is just fantastic on that wing. Updates as we get them. And talking of top-class fullbacks, we're, of course, discussing Aaron Wan-Bissaka. James, is he going to play for United?
Oh, definitely. I think he's going to play. I mean, you don't spend 50 million on a player and leave him on the bench.
You do if you're Man City.
Well, possibly. But I think there is a position for him at Manchester United. That's the one key area. What worries me is that, you know, he might take a bit of time to gel. And these big clubs, they don't really give players time to gel. I mean, look at how he's slotted in, you know, what's happening at the England under-21s. It's noticeable that, you know, he hasn't particularly played. His form at club level hasn't really transferred to international level, whether it be England under 21. But he's got to really get off to a good start, because he's going to have, you know, 60-odd thousand, was it capacity, 70,000 watching him.
Yeah.
And he's going to, you know, be expected to perform. And I'm going to be very, very interested watching to see how he does.
Some bad news for the Lionesses coming in from France. After they'd grown into the game, it's England 0, USA 1. Kristin Press getting her first goal of the tournament. It's an excellent ball into the back post. Some fairly dodgy defending, you'd have to say, from England. Lucy Bronze getting muddled as to where her woman is. And it's a thumping header back in at the near post past Bardsley. It's England 0, USA 1. A test now of Neville's character, the character of his side. Can they do anything here?
Well, I, you know, this is a massive test for the England girls, because we all know that the US is very, very strong women's football and has been for many, many years. I mean, it's more popular than the men's football out there. And, you know, if they are going to make waves in football, they will do if they beat the US. So the expectations are that the US would win this. But, you know, who knows? It could be an upset.
I blame you, Johnny. You said it's coming home, and 9 minutes later, they score.
Yeah, I said it was coming home last summer as well, and look at how that finished.
Exactly.
I think this is the problem with the Lionesses. This is something that everyone talked about in the build-up to this game. We're fantastic going forward, but we're shaky at the back. The positioning looks very poor. They look nervous, and I'm not trying to have a go at them, but I think actually some of the responsibility here has to land on Phil Neville's shoulders. Like, if you're the manager, if you're the coach, organise this defence. It's not that the players aren't good enough.
But then again, you look at the goal they scored. Phil Neville, what can he do about that?
Well, he can teach his players to not leave a woman unmarked on the back post.
But I feel like that's more of a individual mistake rather than coaching for that goal. But yeah, you do have a point. They've been shaky since the start of the game. But it's still early on.
I think they can
flip the switch in a second.
England looking particularly dangerous down that right wing. So there is chance for them yet. And hopefully you will be giving updates throughout the show. Guys, if you could give a message to Aaron Wan-Bissaka, now you know he's gone, what would it be? Would it be polite?
Yeah. Thank you very much. thank you very much. We had some good times together. And all the best in the future. I'm pretty sure when he comes to Selhurst, there'll be a round of applause and people will greet him, because he done nothing wrong. He had He has all the right to move on. He's not always going to get this opportunity in his career. But what hurts me the most is the fact that he's probably going to go and play for England straight away just because he joined United now.
You think it's that straightforward?
Yeah, I feel like with Palace, there's of course, there was a potential that he would play for England. But right now, I feel like his chances has improved ever so much just because it's United. And you saw it with Jesse Lingard when he first came into the scene, and Zaha was playing well, but still, Jesse Lingard, despite playing only 120 minutes, 140 minutes, he still got into the squad ahead of Zaha. But that's the big club effect.
Yeah, he's going to get more recognition, that's for sure. They always do at the top five clubs. But, you know, I'd say good luck to him. You can't begrudge a player that's just signed a contract that's going to earn him, what, 5 million? I mean, that's set him up and his family up for life, whatever happens.
Yeah.
You know, even if he just gets injured on day one, he's earned 5 million quid plus, and he will not ever have to work again.
And also, we gave him, okay, you can argue that we gave him the opportunity, but technically, did we? Because it was due to injuries. And let's say Fosu Mensah and Joel Ward didn't get injured, would Wan-Bissaka be in the team? Would he be the player that he's right now? Who knows? So it's just, it all happened smoothly. There's no upset. Well, we're going to talk about Wilfried Zaha, which that doesn't look like it's going to go down smoothly. So, yeah, Wan-Bissaka, I'll give it a thumbs up.
Yeah, I think it's 50-50. I think the club were quite happy to let him go, and he's happy to go. So you can't blame anyone, really. I think all round they felt maybe this was a good deal. Personally, I would have rather him stayed. But if you've got a young player that, you know, is ambitious and is a big opportunity, and, you know, hey, what happens? You know, he stays at Palace and he ends up getting injured and he'll regret it for the rest of his life.
I'm more worried about the Jenkinson talk. 5 million about his on his replacement. If we replace him with Carl Jenkinson, honestly, like, that would upset me more.
Yeah, that would be a baffling decision. We're going to discuss potential replacements, not just for Wan-Bissaka, but of course for Zaha as well later in the show. I'm not saying he's going. Let's all take this very, very slowly. But as any of the current Brexit negotiators in the civil service can tell you, it's really helpful if you're prepared for, you know, major overhaul. So I'm sure Palace are doing that. An update for you from the Lionesses. It's still England 0, USA 1. Carl Jenkinson would get nowhere near this Lionesses team. He'd get nowhere near the Palace team either. But could he be playing with Wilfried Zaha next season for a different club? Don't go anywhere.
This is Love Sport.
For every young footballer growing up, the dream is to play for the team you support. And we're hearing this week from Wilfried Zaha's brother that the Ivorian international is an Arsenal fan and he'd quite like to play with a cannon on his chest. Gents, you've rejected a £40 million bid, but are you worried?
No. In the fact that Arsenal don't have the money to buy Zaha. If it was another team, let's say a City, then yeah, because realistically I could see that happening. But with Arsenal right now, and even before the Zaha rumours, it was always that Arsenal have a £40 million budget, and it seems like it anyways. They offered £40 million when we put £100 million value on Zaha. So I just find it offensive, really. If I was Steve Parrish and someone offered me £40 million for Zaha, when they know that his value is way higher than that, it's just, what's the point? You're just trying to, what are you trying to do?
Well, you've only got to look at all the media outlets in today, and everyone is just laughing at Arsenal.
Even Arsenal fans, I don't know about you, Johnny, but some Arsenal fans on social media, they were quite embarrassed about it.
Yeah.
I don't understand it.
Well, I think you're right that Arsenal can't afford to spend 80 million quid on Zaha. That's not up for debate. They've got more than 40 million. They've got quite a lot more than 40 million. Because if they can get money off the wage bill, which they will, if they can get some money in player sales, which they have, they're going to spend more than we all think.
If they sell players, then it's a different situation. But okay. For now, I'm not worried.
I'm not stirring the pot here. Yeah. And I'm not trying to get at you. I genuinely think you should be. Because Arsenal are going to spend 25 million on Kieran Tierney. That deal's going to happen.
Okay.
They're probably going to spend 25 odd on Yannick Ferreira Carrasco of Dalian Yifang. I think that deal's going to happen. They're heavily linked with Joachim Andersen and Dennis Pryde of Sampdoria. We're hearing reports in The Sun today that they've made an inquiry. Go on, Ellen White. She's going to win the Golden Boot. What a woman. That celebration is still absolutely terrible. Shameful for all glasses wearers ever. Alex Morgan up the other end of the pitch can wind her neck in. She's got five. They all came against Thailand. Ellen White is a proper striker. She's got six in the tournament. And the Lionesses have got one against the USA. It's one all, and she is a battering ram of a centre forward. I absolutely love it. The best thing about Ellen White, apart from the fact that she's going to be the second English person to win a World Cup Golden Boot in a year, is that every time she scores, she looks surprised. And what a goal that is. The ball flashed across the face of goal, and just as it bounces, she flicks it back towards the far post. That's such a hard finish. Done with an incredible amount of technical ability. Every time she scores, she looks surprised.
Sign her up.
Get her on for Palace.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was a brilliant finish. But 10 minutes later, they score. I told you, it's still earlier on. Let's see what happens.
Lionesses are now well and truly up for it. We were asking about the character. They've clearly got it. The point we were making about Arsenal before I got a bit overexcited is that I don't know how much money they've got. I don't know where it's coming from. But they've got to have more than they're saying.
So they've got to get people off their wages and sell players, haven't they?
One of them is Carl Jenkinson, by the way. So if you sign Carl Jenkinson, you make it more likely that they sign Zaha.
What I find funny is that the reports were that if Arsenal got into the Champions League, the budget would be considerably higher.
Which it would have been.
Yeah, and one of the reasons why they didn't get in is because of Zaha.
There was a tweet from Charles Watts, who's Gold.com's Arsenal correspondent, yesterday, saying Wilfred Zaha needs to plan ahead. If he misses that chance against Arsenal, he's probably already an Arsenal player.
Another thing that where I was looking around and it just came up was that Arsenal owe 100 million in installments. I think that's normal.
For
every
what?
Club in transfers installments.
Okay.
But I feel like that's normal with every club. Even us, we owe Sacco's installments still. But the thing is, what Arsenal offered was 40 million. This is what the reports are saying. 40 million and they pay it over 5 years.
But
Palace won't do that.
No,
why should Palace do that?
And you're spot on, but what if Arsenal aren't making a bid at that point to have it accepted? They're playing a bid to do exactly this. They're on the wind-up. They're turning Wilfred Zaha's head. They're getting the Arsenal-supporting boy going, well, hang on a minute, I want to play for Arsenal. We're hearing reports from Sky Sports that he's now got his heart set on the deal. I don't know whether that's true or not, but they're winding you up. They're winding me up. They're winding Wilf Zaha up, and they're making it more likely that they'll get him for under that Palace asking price. But I want to read you a tweet from Back of the Nest's own Nick Gillard, which he sent in to me on the Arsenal show last night. He said, derisory bid, annoyed by the Adidas ad. The fact that the lad is in Egypt muddies the waters a bit. His brother should stay shtum. If he goes, I hope there's a bidding war. Second team interested, apparently. If Wilf wants out, he'll have to give a transfer request. It will cost him a few bob. Is this derisory? Are you genuinely offended? Are you angry with Arsenal?
Yes, I am angry with Arsenal, but I'm also a bit disappointed, or not with Wilf, but Wilf's camp. The fact that they came out publicly and said that, well, this is his dream move. He's supported Arsenal since he was a kid, and he wants to move there. I feel like I'm a bit disappointed about that. They could have kept that private. But it just shows that he's willing to go to Arsenal, but if another team was involved, I'll still be more worried. I just want, next week we'll probably see if Arsenal sells anyone or what happens, but they need to sell people, and I don't think Palace will sell Zaha last minute as well. I've said this before, I feel like if a bid is going to happen and if Zaha is going to actually leave, it has to be the next week or two, ideally. We can't really sell him in deadline day without any replacements. So there's also that.
I can't see him going at all because, you know, he signed a 5-year contract at the beginning of last season. And, you know, they must have had a conversation at that point and said, look, you know, if we don't get the right money, I think they did have a conversation. We didn't get the right money. You're staying with us. We're giving you a long term contract, good wages. You'll only go if the price is right. He's just got to accept that. And yeah, he's, family might come out with statements and throwing their toys out the pram because, you know, they like Arsenal and they want to see him perhaps better try and better himself. Well, you know, Arsenal not in the Champions League. What are they going to achieve next season? They're going to get top four?
But that's...
I'm not sure they will. So, you know, if we don't... He just needs to concentrate on doing a job for Palace, get back to pre-season training. And if someone comes in of a bid of about 70 million, then yeah, we'll start talking. But other than that, just ignore it.
Yeah, also another thing that I'm annoyed about is the fact that people always say, oh, look, Hazard went for 88 million. Why Zaha's not worth 70 million?
Yeah, it's the contract situation.
Yeah, but that's not the case because Zaha is worth around 70 to 80 million to us, not 100 million. Mm. But that's another thing that people need to realise that the clubs don't put value based on what other players go for, but it depends on how valuable the player is for the actual club. So they need to take that into consideration.
You're saying a lot of things such as Zaha needs to get his head down. He needs to ignore it. We don't need to sell him.
Mm.
I hope that's true, but we live in an age of player power. You're right. He signed a new deal. He's under contract. But in 2019, if his head really does turn, is there anything Palace can do?
Yeah, why did you say you've got to stay with us? And
but how often does that work, James, nowadays?
Well, it does. I've seen top players on the bench. I mean, you know...
Are Palace going to keep Zaha and bench him?
I don't think he'll be on the bench. I think he will still perform because he's a decent lad, and I think that, you know, he will still put the effort in.
Okay.
And if anything, it's an incentive for him to play even better next season to say, look, justifiably, I should be valued at 70, 80 million, and this is why.
So, unless someone bids 80 million, are you saying Wilfried Zaha is staying at Crystal Palace for the duration of this contract?
I'd say it's 80 is a tops. You know... Perhaps less than they might let him go for less because, you know, we're looking at a year on now and another year and he's getting a little bit older. So you could possibly think, well, you know, maybe the time is right for Palace to rebuild. You know, Wan-Bissaka's gone, that's 50 million. If we get another, would it be about 60 million because of the cut that Man United got to take, whatever it is. So you could say, well, why don't we just do them both? I mean, I wouldn't like it, but it could be that they take the money for both of them at the same time and say, well, yeah, this next season is going to be a bit of a rebuilding project. We've got a lot of money now and we can buy three or four decent players. But no, I don't think that they're going to let him go unless he gets a reasonable bid in.
Do you think Crystal Palace as a club have a right to hold Wilfried Zaha back at this point in his career?
Yes, because he's under contract till 2023. Simple as that. It's still business at the end of the day. You have to think about it. If Palace do sell him, the chances of us getting relegated increases significantly. And in potentially in the future, that's going to impact us financially as well.
Do you agree that if you hold on to him and he wants to go, you are holding him back?
Yeah, I would say so. I'm just putting myself in Zaha's position. If I was Zaha, I would want the similar move as well. Imagine Palace being a club like Arsenal and actually competing for trying to compete to get into top four, and you're 26 years old, you're in your prime. Yeah, it's right that Zaha wants to move on because you saw what happened with Wan-Bissaka. Both of them, Zaha's at his peak, so he should be able to move on, but you have to think about it in business ways as well.
I mean, one thing we've seen with Chelsea recently is Eden Hazard, who've been looking for a move to Real Madrid for quite a while, and Chelsea for 1 year, then another year, then another year, said, listen, we'll let you have your move, just give us another year. We need you just for one more. Could you see the club doing that? Or arguably, have you already done that? Has Wilfried Zaha done his time, as it were?
Well, why would they have signed a new five-year contract last? That doesn't really make sense. Yeah, it protects us to get a decent value for him for when he's sold. But it appears that, you know, the long-term view was that Wilf was happy to stay with us. And maybe, you know, he was sold on a plan that Roy Hodgson was going to develop the team and the team was going to advance and maybe... I think, personally, it's to do with the Wan-Bissaka sale.
Okay.
I believe that that has rocked the boat. And he suddenly thought to himself that, actually, we've now weakened our team. And I felt that this team was going to go forwards, maybe get a new striker in, like, Batshuayi. stick with Aaron Wan-Bissaka. And I felt that maybe we would have, with Aaron Wan-Bissaka and maybe a Batshuayi in the team and maybe another signing, we could have pushed for a very, very good top 10 position. And maybe because we've allowed Aaron Wan-Bissaka, I think that that has a big influence on him getting itchy feet.
Yeah, I feel like that Aaron Wan-Bissaka might have influenced him, but it's not the fact that he left and we're a weaker team now. It's the fact that he's looking at Wan-Bissaka's like, all right, he's moved on. Why can't I move on? Because I'm at my peak as well. It's just a thing that you're selling your best player, so Wan-Bissaka, he's left, so why can't I move on and compete as well in the highest level? I feel like that's what contributed it, rather than, oh, we have a weaker team, because at the end of the day, there's still a chance that we could get Batshuayi.
Yeah, but we're happy with the price for Aaron Wan-Bissaka. I mean, Arsenal have come in, I'm not being funny, but
yeah,
Zaha's been in the Premiership for how many years? 6-7 years? Aaron Wan-Bissaka's been in it for one season, and he's commanded a bid of 50 million, and Arsenal have come in with 40. I mean, how ridiculous is that?
So how much...
No, exactly.
Completely fair enough. How much do Arsenal have to pay for you to go, hang on a minute, let's talk?
I would say that they need to look at about... I mean, you're looking at the defenders. I mean, you know, you've got the Leicester player that's a defender, and they're wanting 70 million for him.
They rejected it.
Yeah. So I don't think 80 million is unrealistic.
But I feel like because Zaha... If he does actually want to leave, that the value slightly decreases, I feel like. It's from 80 to 70, realistically 70 mil. Palace, if you come with 70 million, I could see Zaha leaving. Let's keep it as that. But 80 million, I feel like it is a bit of a push. I don't think Arsenal would be willing to pay 80 mil.
What if Palace say 70 million or nothing, and Arsenal say, we'll go up to 60? But no higher. They bid 60. Wilfred Zaha, by this point, head spinning 360 degrees, like a spinning top, completely set on that Arsenal move, and Palace say no. Are you fully confident he's going to get his head down and just go, fair enough, we'll do another year at Selhurst Park?
Yeah, because it's not like he's away from... We always talk about family and Zaha, but he's still going to be in London. He's still going to be next to his family. It's not like, oh, if he moves to Arsenal, he's closer home. He's at home right now. This is, you know, this is where he's at. So I don't feel like he would be hugely upset. So.
He's still only 26 as well, DR. So, you know, he's still got plenty of time on his side he can prove to himself, do you know what? If they're not going to pay 60 million, I'm going to make them regret that, and I'm going to have a season of my life, and I'm going to be worth 80 million, and someone else is going to buy me.
What I'm worried about is that with Wan-Bissaka, we were talking about his value increasing, but with Zaha, I feel like his value is, like, he's at his peak right now, 70 to 80 million. I don't feel like it will increase, and it might be a case that in two seasons, depending on what he does, the value could decrease, because he's going to be 28 years old, and if you look at, because teams do look at stats, if you look at his stats, is he actually worth 80 million for a 28-year-old? No, not really.
But he
really.
Is That's to what, Palace, which is the point that you're making.
Yeah, but still, in two seasons, there's that gamble that if we don't sell Zaha now, we might actually lose out on some money because his value might decrease.
That's a good point. A quick update for you from England versus USA in the Women's World Cup. You might have heard me groan a moment ago. That's because it's not good news. I shouldn't have been rude about Alex Morgan. I'm really sorry, Alex. Please forgive us. She scored. It was a fantastic ball in from the left, a thumping header in. Let's talk about her celebration, though. She appeared to do a sort of sarcastic tea drinking style thing, because obviously that's the only thing we do in England, apart from obviously elect leaders of the country who, despite not being great, aren't quite as bad as yours. I mean, the one blessing of this, if England go out to the USA, is that we're going to see the mother of all fights between the national team and Donald Trump, which I, for one, am absolutely here for. But make no mistake, Lioness is still very much in this. A rasping drive from distance almost equalised straight away. This game is far from over. Updates throughout the show. And similarly, this transfer saga for Wilfred Zaha, I worry, is far from over as well. Gents, I've got to press you. Is he going? I think he will.
I don't think so.
You're both saying no?
I said this for Wan-Bissaka as well.
If Arsenal have got the money, I think he'll go.
Yeah, if he's got, but right now...
70 million.
Here's one to make you make me really popular in the studio and with our listeners. I think he'll go to Arsenal. and I think he'll go for less than 60 million English pounds.
Oh, no.
Am I talking rubbish? Get in touch. 0208 7020 558. I'm certainly not popular, but one man who is our upcoming legend of the week. Don't go anywhere.
This is Love Sport.
It's a Crystal Palace fan show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and James Howard, and DR Kurnaz of Back of the Nest. A quick update from the Women's World Cup. The Lionesses is currently losing 1-2 to the US Women's National Team. Still very much in it, the Lionesses is fighting, scrapping, but I have to say the Americans are looking a bit clinical. And talking of players who are clinical, it's time for our Legend of the Week. Gents, who have you gone for this week?
It's the one and only Ian Wright.
Yes. Of course, a topical name, not for any reason other than the fact that he is a striker, a forward, who signed for Arsenal Football Club from Crystal Palace. Why could we possibly have chosen him?
Oh, I wonder. Wilfried Zaha, potentially moving to Arsenal.
Yes. Yeah.
History repeating itself, yeah. But that is a success story, though. I mean, you know, a success story for Crystal Palace and for Arsenal, Ian Wright. Fantastic player. I often have a chat with Arsenal fans and remind them that he played more for Palace than he did for Arsenal. 225 caps for Palace, 221 for Arsenal. 90 goals for Palace, 128 for Arsenal. But then again, he would have been in a better team at the time because he signed for Palace in 1985 when we were really poor at that time and Steve Coppell was rebuilding the side. But yeah, I've known Ian Wright for many years, grew up as a 16-year-old.
You know him personally?
Not personally, but I've met him a few times.
Oh, so you do know him personally. That counts. Yeah, anyone I've ever met, I'm like, yeah, best mates.
Yeah, well, I suppose so. Yeah, the first time I met him was when we were in the old second division, and it was probably his first or second season with us. And he was a friend, noticed him. He was on a white mountain bike and he was down near Forest Hill or Catford. And someone said, "That's Ian Wright." And I said, "Is it?" I had no idea.
Get him off that mountain bike. Keep his legs safe.
At the time, he was banned from driving. So he was,
oh, wow.
He was on a mountain bike and he was at a cash machine. So we egged each other on and went up to him and said, "Hello, mate. Are you Ian Wright?"
Can you imagine David Beckham?
And it was him. And he was a lovely guy at that time. And I'm sure he is now. But yeah, we had a little chat with him and how things going. He was very nice. But I've met him a couple of times since the training ground. Always found him friendly and approachable. Used the same physio that he's used in the local area. And, you know, even though Arsenal had a very, very top physio at the time, he still went back to his old physio where I live. But yeah, I know some people, I know you're going to go on about this kiss the badge thing.
Yeah, what is that about?
So I don't. Nick, we need Nick to tell us what all that's about. But it's.
He kissed the Arsenal badge
when he was playing for him.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, who doesn't?
Possibly against Palace.
But, yeah, okay.
But also, it seems like something actually happened beforehand. That's why. Did someone go to his house or something, or to his mom's house? There was a story like that. Well, from what I was in there, the linebacker, but that's what I saw. That's what I saw.
I wasn't at his mum's house either, yeah, just exactly. To confirm. No one in this studio.
I've got funny. Was it Nick's house? Because
he knows everything about it. If you're listening, just have a word with Nick Gard of Back of the Nest. No, don't really. He's a very nice man. What's the attitude to Wright amongst the Palace fan base? Because obviously, as you say, fantastic for you, fantastic for Arsenal. Do people respect him despite the fact that he left the club?
Oh, I think so, of my era. I mean, I don't know what Nick thinks, but I mean, I personally was a great fan of his. And I so enjoyed the way he just suddenly sort of got thrown in at the deep end and just started scoring goals for fun. And he built the partnership up with Mark Brighton. We were absolutely a force. I mean, I know we were talking about it last week because a lot of it's down to the manager, Steve Coppell. But you know, him, you just put the ball in front of him, in front of goal, and, you know, not just in the area, but outside the area. And he would always be so clinical. Fantastic player. Really enjoyed watching him.
The Wright and Bright duo, do you think is our greatest duo of all time? I can't think of any other really.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
Yeah, as a 4-4-2 system, that definitely for me it was the best partnership. Yeah.
Hmm. What about in terms of his playing style? Because I couldn't watch him live, but of course I've seen clips of him. But yeah, what was his strengths and what about his weaknesses? Because I haven't seen any weakness of in Wright. All you see is goals. That's yeah, what happens when you watch highlights.
I suppose the weakness would be his height, but then he had Mark Bright, so Mark Bright would always, you know, be the one that was the target guy. But yeah, so height wise, it's probably you'd not see him win many headers or flick them on, but he didn't need to because the systems that teams were playing in those days were pretty much 4-4-2. So, you know, but strengths were, you know, he was exceptionally quick with his feet and turning with the ball and clinical in front of goal, very skillful. I mean, I remember him coming off the bench at Wembley and turning Gary Pallister inside out, and he'd literally broken his wet leg or ankle 6 weeks before. He was that good. But his enthusiasm was amazing. I mean, he was so pumped up for every game. And he used to had a great rapport with fans, a great rapport.
But I guess I'm trying to imagine myself being in a non-league club and being signed to Crystal Palace. And every day you have to take it like that, I guess. It's just one of them things
where...
Yeah,
it's a dream come true for him.
Yeah, it's just crazy on how we actually started in the first place.
Yeah, and it's crazy that at that age that he was, you know, that he was a latecomer to the professional game. I mean, he played in Sunday League football. I mean, a couple of guys I used to play with, we played in the same league as his Sunday League team, Tenenby, and they remember him, the guys I played with, that scoring a hat-trick from midfield. I mean, he was... No, sorry, five goals in midfield, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
But then you shouldn't
you? I mean, if you're good enough, taking nothing away from Ian Wright, if you're good enough to play for England,
yeah,
I would like to think that if you played Sunday League, you would score a few.
But can you imagine, I don't see that happening nowadays, though.
Well, I mean, I've played in football teams who've conceded five goals to men who can barely run. So, like, exactly. I would expect Ian Wright to do the business at that level.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and that's why he was spotted so early, and he ended up, I think his team got to a Sunday League Cup final, and then Dulwich asked him along for a trial or whatever, and then he was spotted straight away, and in fact, over that summer, he didn't pursue Dulwich Hamlet, he didn't sign for them. I think Copple said, hey, hold on a second, we're having him, and went to Palace, and the rest is history.
Were you slightly annoyed, and I bring this up partly because Nick Gillard mentioned it in his tweet, were you annoyed or perhaps concerned to see Ian Wright in that Arsenal video advertising the new kit? You've got a very prominent former Palace player talking about what it is to be Arsenal in a week where Palace's current star man comes out and says, well, I'm an Arsenal fan.
I wasn't around back then, of course, but if you're actually looking at it now, Ian Wright, he seems more connected to Arsenal than Palace, so
yeah.
I'm not annoyed. It's just what it is, and as James mentioned, he's actually got more appearances for Palace, but it's just the way it turned out to be at Arsenal. I don't know about you. What do you think of it?
Yeah, you know, he's got 220 odd games for Palace and 220 odd games for Arsenal, so he probably has a same affection for each club.
I don't think so. I honestly think he has more affection for Arsenal. That's what it seems like anyways. With Ian Wright, he does appreciate us. But with Arsenal, he seems more involved with the club than he is with Palace. Well, and I feel like that's why some fans are actually frustrated along, you know, with the kissing of the badge and really not associating himself much with Palace.
Well, he certainly, you know, his personal career-wise, he's won more medals and done better with Arsenal for obvious reasons. So... he's got more to shout about playing for Arsenal than he did for Palace, but I've seen him enough times, you know, come back to Palace and talk about Palace, and he still has very, very fond words to say and good memories.
From a Palace point of view, what was the best goal that you remember Ian Wright scoring in a Palace shirt?
probably for the stage, it was probably that one at Wembley, which was against Manchester United. He scored so many. that was great. That was.
I didn't get to watch him, so I'll be lying if I had said that I had a favourite. Of course, I've seen the clips and highlights, and that's the one that came into my mind really.
Oh, was it?
Because when I associate, when you think of Wright, I straight away think of Wright and Bright duo, and the Wembley. Mm. That goal he scored at Wembley, was it? How many did you score? One or two?
Two, I think.
Was it two? Because I remember something like a chip kind of goal. Yeah, that's the thing I think about straight away.
Well, he was a scorer of fantastic goals for Crystal Palace, and that is why Ian Wright is this week's Legend of the Week.
This is Love Sport.
It's the Palace Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. And gents, you've been subjected to a lot of transfer chat in terms of players leaving Palace. But let's think more positively who could come in as replacements. We're going to start with Aaron Wan-Bissaka, of course, the only star currently to have gone. You need a right back. You've nominally got 50 million quid to play with. Who are you going for?
Maybe Nathaniel Clyne is a name that's been mentioned, but I don't know how you feel about that.
No, he's the wrong end of 20s for me. Mm. I don't want us to go and buy a proven fullback that's going to cost us a lot of money and he's going to be towards the end of his, you know, football career.
Wasn't it 50 million that was suggested, something like that? 50 million is really...
Well, it's going to be high wages, though. And Bournemouth, I'll tell you what, Bournemouth fans haven't been particularly that fond of him, to be honest.
He wasn't that good.
No, exactly.
He really wasn't. He didn't play that much.
I would rather take a punt on somebody, you know, if we're going to spend 15, 20 million, you know, maybe look at somebody from the Championship.
Are we looking at Max Ahrens of Norwich?
Yeah, but I know we spoke about it the other week, you know, maybe 10 million. I don't know what they'd sell him for.
They wouldn't sell him for 20 to 25 million. And I don't know if we're willing to spend that much for a fullback because, yes, the position, of course, matters because right now we've got Joel Ward who can't defend, defend crosses especially, and who's is liability going forward as well. So we need a replacement.
You're really keen on him.
I've got a different memory of Wardy than you.
I used to love Joel Ward, but I don't think at right back or
first choice right back. Is that on this season when he's had to come in?
Or? From what I've seen this season and the limited games he's played last season as well.
I think the problem is that Wardy, like most players, are really good when they're the regular first team player. When they're in and out of the team, some players suffer from that. Some players do come on and they're impact players and they do really well. But I think Wardy, you start him off on day one, first Saturday of the season, and he knows that's his spot, I think you'll get a decent game out of him most weeks. Because that's the memories I've got of him.
I just see him as a potential future centre-back rather than a right-back. Mm. I just don't see it. I don't think he's got the legs for it, really, to play right-back. And also, let's say he does start for us, we still need someone else. We saw what happened with Van Aanholt. It's just, once you don't have depth, it can influence a player.
So we've got Kelly that can play right back, England international.
But it's just going forward. I feel like
how?
Yeah.
Sorry.
I tried to say it about laughing.
Say it quietly. England international. Sorry. But how? There are some of these players where you just think I might as well be an England international. Wait, how does this happen?
Did he get selected whilst he was with Liverpool?
Yes, I think so. Yeah. He got a cap as a sort of promising young right back.
Exactly.
But Jake Livermore's got about 8 England caps.
To be fair, he played with West Brom as well. So I don't know. It just happens. It's just one of them. I'm pretty sure there's weirder players.
Yes.
That I've got
there will be. I shouldn't be so unkind. He's certainly much better than me.
Yeah.
The one name that came up earlier was Carl Jenkinson because Palace are being linked with a £5 million move for the Arsenal right back to replace AWB. You're not keen on that?
Not really. If you're going to get someone, don't get someone that's similar to Joel Ward. It just feels like you're getting enough of Joel Ward. And it makes sense.
I actually would rather have Joel Ward.
And that's worrying. If I'm saying that Joel Ward is not capable enough, you're bringing in Carl Jenkinson and you're actually spending money on him.
Well, Arsenal Twitter was talking a lot about Carl Jenkinson potentially going to Palace and going, listen, we can give them 40 million for Zaha or we can give them 50 million and Jenkinson.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's pretty much the same value.
Exactly. That's my thing. That's my point. Whereas with Max Ahrens, of course, he's got areas of improvement in terms of defending, but going forward, he's very good going forward. So as a fullback in the Premier League nowadays, you need to be really good on one side, either going forward or either defending. And just Carl Jenkinson, what is he good at? He's not good at going forward. Is he good at defending?
I feel
not
like
really.
This is the point where some aging singer should shout absolutely nothing.
Exactly. And there's no point spending money on him, honestly. I just don't see, what's the point? Just keep Joel Ward and play
keep
the rest.
Keep Joel Ward and redirect the funds to other positions.
Yeah,
we need
other positions such as striker. I'd rather spend on a striker or another winger. I'm not too sure. In terms of right back, we do need a replacement, but if it's Carl Jenkinson, no point even trying.
If Crystal Palace sell Aaron Wan-Bissaka, which they have done, and if they go on to sell Wilf Zaha as well, and you don't replace them adequately, do you get relegated?
Yeah. It's simple as you just...
Is it that straightforward?
Yeah. You just looked at... I looked at our strikers the other day, and we have Benteke, Connor Wickham, and Sirloff as our strikers. I mean, Wickham, he doesn't play. Sirloff, God knows what's happening with him. And Benteke, that's it. Like, we have nothing going forward. And I know Zaha's not a striker, but even if you look out wide, so you have Andros Townsend and Max Meyer, I guess, would take over. It's just, I don't think it's good enough.
I think that's another reason why they just can't let Zaha go that easily, because it isn't just the player, it is the team that's going to suffer. And unless they say, right, this sale is on condition that we get Batshuayi or whoever, then fair enough. But I think it's not just the money. I think it's a conditional sale that says we will sell Zaha, but they have to have someone else lined up as well.
If you did sell Zaha, how would you approach it with that money? Assuming you got at least a chunk of it to reinvest, would you go for one like-for-like star, or would you try and strengthen the whole team?
See, that's the difference between selling Zaha and Wan-Bissaka, because even though we got 50 million for Wan-Bissaka, the club has made a loss in the previous two seasons, I believe. So some of that money has gone to that, of course. It's not like we can just keep the 50 million and reinvest it. Whereas if he sells Zaha, he's one of the top earners at the club, and our issues, as you know, has been with wages. So it allows us to actually rebuild the squad in a better way than selling Wan-Bissaka.
Is it possible, DR, that selling Zaha could be a blessing in disguise? You get him off the wage bill, you can bring in two or three players to replace him. Could you have a stronger overall team without the one star?
The opportunity you've got is that if we all know pretty much what Zaha's on, but you could, in effect, have two or three players that are pretty much on loan. So it's not costing you anything. That's just Zaha's wages. And then you've got the Zaha money and you've got the Aaron Wan-Bissaka money. So it does free up a lot more money, and it will be a rebuilding exercise. But there is, potentially we could do well out of it.
I prefer quality over quantity as well.
Yeah.
Because when we got promoted, we brought in like 12 new players, and half of them we didn't even see. So we don't want to go in that path again.
One thing we've discussed a lot on this show is whether Roy Hodgson is the right man to take Palace forward. There have been disagreements at various points. It seems likely or almost certain he'll be around this year and quite possibly only for this year. Is there any part of you that worries about giving a large, large chunk of potential investment to a manager who's very unlikely to be at the club in more than 18 months' time?
Not really, because we've got director of football who deals with transfers as well. It's not just Roy. Of course, Roy will have a say in transfers, but I'm not as worried. I don't think the club will be that dumb to just playing out, say, Roy, you can just pick the players and we'll do whatever, because the club need to have a say as well. I don't see the future with Roy Hodgson. I could see him retiring at the end of the upcoming season. So, I trust the club not to give that much power to Roy Hodgson, but of course he deserves a bit of power.
Yeah, we've tended to go more for the short-term contracts and a lot of loan players recently, so perhaps we would just pursue that road for the next season or so, and then we have a plan B for when Roy's about to retire.
Well, in a week where Aaron Wan-Bissaka has left the club, the hope for Palace fans has to be that Wilfred Zaha will stick around. But Arsenal are prowling, and certainly one member of the Zaha family, his brother, seems to want that move to happen. You'll have to join us next week on the Crystal Palace Fan Show, and we'll find out, is he still a Palace player? See you then.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.